funny story.
Okay, now we just missed the funny story. All right, so we're in Perek Bet in Hilchot Deot, and we're up to Halacha Gimel. And just to remind you that yesterday in Halacha Bet, in the second Halacha of chapter 2 of Perek Bet, what we said was that when a person reaches one extreme, he basically has to go to the other extreme, Achiyakor, until he uproots this extreme from his heart. So if, for example, you find that you're angry, so you have to go to the other extreme. We didn't get really define how you know what one extreme is and how you know what the other extreme is, right? But you got to go to the other extreme. You have to do it Achiyakor, until it gets uprooted, right? When you go back to the middle ground, then you have to try to stick with that. It's very hard to do. Okay? And he finishes the halacha, and this is what you do with all your character traits. If you're off to one extreme, distance yourself to the other extreme. And practice this for a while until you find that middle ground. And that is the midah benunit shebechol de'avadeya. And that's the middle ground for every character trait and really for everything in life. Okay? I want you to know that if you had to pick the most difficult part of this process, what do you think it would be?
Changing.
Pardon? Well, changing is always challenging.
Recognizing
the problem. Oh, I agree with you.
There are plenty of people out there to point them out to you.
I think that the beginning of the process is always the hardest. The Gemara says, "Kol ha'atchalot kashot." This is a really good rule to know in life. Because very often you start something, and it's difficult. And in your mind, you think, this is just going to be difficult. So it's harder to stick with it. But if you understand that it's difficult because it's a beginning, right? Then you realize that it won't stay that way. By the way, it's true for everything. Like, think about it. Like, the first time you meet a girl, and you kind of want to get to know her, it's a little more difficult to make a comfortable conversation. You have to think about it more. But once you're familiar with someone, there's no effort to making a conversation in the same way. It's not really difficult. When you get to yeshiva and you start learning, the beginning is difficult, right? You start a new sugya. It's difficult. Once you're into the zone, it's much easier. And that's definitely true with character development. And I think the reason in this case that it's so difficult is because most people haven't even defined that they're at an extreme. And by the time you realize that you're really at an extreme, that extreme is so severe that it's much, much more work to get to the other extreme. So the question becomes, what do you do if you don't know if you're an extreme? So now the Rambam doesn't say this. This is the Binny Friedman theory. I have never found this to be wrong. Now that's not the same as saying that I know this to always be true. But in my experience to date, this has always been true. When you think that you've got something to work on, and you're not sure that you're at an extreme, pretend that you're at an extreme. And it will always benefit you. Right? If you find that, you feel like you're being too talkative, but you don't think you're an extreme. Right? You know, sometimes I'll go to a dinner or somewhere out for Shabbos or whatever. And, you get to a stage where you just feel like you're talking too much. You say something silly, you feel uncomfortable, whatever it is. Just be quiet for a while. Being quiet for me is an extreme. Okay? Be quiet for a while. Just sit at the table, and I'll do that sometimes. I'll just sit for 20 minutes, and I won't talk, and that's difficult for me, and that gets me back to the middle ground. Very simple. You know, if you walk into the basement one morning, and just feeling angry, so you don't think that you're an extreme, you don't think you're an angry person, but you think that in that moment, you're off balance, pretend you're at an extreme. And practice the other extreme for a little bit of time until you feel that it's gone. This is, I can't even begin to describe to you what a valuable habit this would be. It changes your life. So now we're up to Halacha Gimel. V'yesh Deot, okay, this is Perek Bet Halacha Gimel, chapter 2, Halacha 3. V'yesh Deot she'asur lo, this is a very strong language. V'yesh Deot she'asur lo le'adam linhog bahem bebeinonit. There are some character traits that you can't practice the middle ground. You actually have to find yourself at an extreme. That's where you have to be. You have to be so nervous about this character trait. There is no middle ground for this character trait, right? You know, like to take an extreme example, Well, you know what? We don't have to, because the Rambam will give us an example. For who govalev? He doesn't say kemo govalev. He doesn't say like arrogance. He says, and this is arrogance. The definition of arrogance is that any form of arrogance, right, is off. Now, there's two ways to look at this. One way to look at this is that arrogance is so dangerous that you can't risk becoming arrogant, and therefore better to be at the other extreme. And the other possibility is that the definition of arrogance is that it's an extreme. Now, this is an interesting question. Why do you think arrogance is different from almost all the other character traits, in that arrogance, by definition, you can't find a middle ground for arrogance. Why do you think that is? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well, how would you define arrogance? What is arrogance?
Well, I think it's more like when you're arrogant, you kind of take Hashem out of the equation and think about yourself and that. And in order to, like, you know, grow and become a better person, you have to realize that it's not you, it is Hashem.
Okay. So this is very deep. Think about this. See what happens when you put on one of those kippot? It's unbelievable, right? If a person can be arrogant, by definition, there has to be something flawed in their relationship with Hashem. It cannot be that you have a healthy relationship with Hashem and you're arrogant. It can't be. Because if you had a healthy relationship with Hashem and you understood that Hashem created you and that it's not about you, you couldn't be arrogant. The definition of arrogance is that there's something wrong with your relationship with Hashem. If you meet a Rav and he gives off arrogant energy, there's something off in his relationship with Hashem, by definition, right? Any human being. So, since you have to distance yourself from an unhealthy relationship with Hashem, since the goal, like, what's the goal? Why are we here? Well, at the end of it, there is one goal that is at the root of all the goals that we have in this world. There's one mission that every human being has, that we have as a Jewish people, that's the reason for our being.
Connecting to Hashem.
Okay, you could call it connecting to Hashem. Bringing Hashem into the world, which are very similar. I'm not sure they're exactly the same, but definitely true. Right? That's why we're here. Right? You're given a world, the world is imperfect, and you have this opportunity to bring Hashem into the world, make the world better. Right? Tikkun Olam, right, which everybody sort of lauds as the goal, is actually the vehicle. It's the result, even, of the real goal, which is to bring Hashem into the world. So, if you're fulfilling your mission on earth, if you're bringing Hashem into the world, then you can't be arrogant. So if you're arrogant, you can't possibly fulfill your mission in this world. Do you understand that? Yeah.
But how is it possible if Hashem already is in this world?
Pardon?
Hashem's like already like in everything. So how is it?
Oh, so that's a very good question. One way of looking, did everybody hear the question? How is it possible that we have to bring Hashem into the world if Hashem is everywhere? One way of understanding that the Ramchal, Derech Hashem, of Moshe Chaim Lutzato, suggests that there is one aspect of Hashem which Hashem allowed to be dependent on us. That's the concept of Hashem as Melech. It's not an accident that one of the themes of Rosh Hashanah is Malchuyot, right? A king is not a king unless he has subjects, okay? There's no objective value, right? If someone is the king of a country, and everybody leaves the country, and he's left alone on a desert island, he's not a king. He's just an idiot, right? What makes him a king is that he has subjects. And if somebody shows up in the country and doesn't accept him as king, he's really not king. So Hashem is king by virtue of the fact that we Hashem accept Hashem as king. That's a very difficult concept to get your hands around, because isn't Hashem objectively king? And the only way that makes sense is that that's what Hashem wants. Right? Like, it'd be difficult to say that we can decide not to accept Malchut Hashem, and therefore Hashem is Melech, even though Hashem wants to be Melech. Hashem wants to be Melech because Hashem wants us to want Hashem to be Melech. Hashem desperately wants to give to us. And Hashem created the world in such a way that Hashem can't give to us unless we want what Hashem wants to give us. That's the paradigm for all relationships. Right? I desperately want to give things to you, but I can't give them to you unless you want them. I desperately want to give things to my kids. I can't give it to them unless they want it. And you desperately will want to give things to other people, but you can't give it to them unless they want it. Right? You have a chavruta, and you're really into learning one day. You're really into some piece of chumash. You're all excited. I don't know, whatever it is. And you get your chavruta walks in, and he's got this look on his face. Right? And you're just really into it. You can't give him you're into it unless he wants to get it. That can be painful sometimes, right? So that's the essence. That's the essence, right, of what Malchut is. Okay? And that's the problem with arrogance. She'ein derech hatova. By the way, what did we say in the Torah? Look at the Rambam's language. The Rambam is very specific. Ein derech hatova she'ei adam anav bilvad. It's not good that man should just be humble. Ela she'ei shafel ruach v'tiyeh ruchon nimuchamon. Rather, you should be so humble, you should actually be lowly to a certain degree. Now, why is the Rambam talking, why does the Rambam use the word tova here? So you'd miss this unless we have the discussion we just had. What did we say is the definition of tov? We once said that sometimes you can understand something by looking at what is the opposite of that something. Right? So what's the opposite of tov? What is lo tov? What's the only thing that is described as not being good in the Torah? Pardon? Being alone. Lo tov eyot adam levado. Right? There are only two places in the Torah that I know of, like there could be more, I just don't remember them offhand, that the Torah actually says something is not good. One is when the Torah says that Adam is alone, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo, I'm going to make him a helpmate. Anybody know where the other one is? No? When Yitro comes to visit Moshe, you can look this up in Shemot. When Yitro comes to visit Moshe, okay, and sees that Moshe is doing all the judging on his own, Yitro says, Lo Tov, this is not good. It's not good, you're doing all the judging on your own. Man is not supposed to be on his own. There's only one. One. Right? See, we think of the number one. Rav Kook talks about this. I'm sure Rabbi Aaron must have brought this up at some point. We think of the number one as a number as it relates to other numbers. Like, there's one cup as opposed to two cups. But this is just this cup, right? It's just, you know, sort of less than two. It comes before two. But the one that refers to Hashem is a oneness that's different from all the numbers because it encompasses all the numbers. It's the true meaning of alone. Hashem is alone. Ein od milvado. Right? Hashem is levado. Hashem is alone because there's no compare. So that's only Hashem. Right? So anyone who thinks that he can be alone, which is, by the way, one of the roots of arrogance, right, is distancing Hashem from his life because he thinks that he can be Hashem. Right? Devorah walked into my office this morning with a smile. She said, you know, the Ari, what's his name? Salmavich from from YU. I can't believe his last name. Solomon, right? Ari Solomon. So we happened to, we saw each other at the airport on the way back. And you know, he said he really wanted to talk to me. I said, that's so funny. I really wanted to talk to you. But we were both running and we had things to do before we got on the plane. So he says, well, where are you sitting? So I said, I don't remember. I said, no, 43B. He says, oh, well, I'm 43. So we sat next to each other. It was awesome, right? So we got to talk, and I was following up with an email. And I wrote him an email, and I said, you know, and he called me last night because whatever, somebody's coming to visit today. And so I wrote him an email, and I meant to say, like, good speaking with you today, right? But I left out an O by accident. So the email starts, God speaking to you today, right? So Devorah thought that was really funny. So she said, in case Ari comments on this, I just wanted you to know what you wrote. God speaking with you today, right? Why is that so funny? Because it's ridiculous, right? But there are people for whom that's not so ridiculous. There are people who may not be conscious about it, and they may not put it quite in that extreme fashion, but on some level of the subconscious, they think that they're in control. They think that they're God, right? I'm in control, my way or the highway. That's the root of arrogance. If you really understood that you're a part of the reality that Hashem created, you couldn't be that, right? And that's lo tov. Arrogance is not good because it gives the perception, it allows you to feel that you're alone, you're unique, you're better than, right? So he continues, you have to be really lowly. Okay? Ulufichach ne'emar b'Moshe Rabbeinu anav ma'od, v'aish Moshe anav ma'od. It doesn't say that he's just anav, it says he's anav ma'od. Now let's think about this for a minute. What is anava? I'm sure we've talked about this, but this is one of those things we're going to mention from time to time because there's like seven or eight ideas that if you walk away from this year with those ideas, the world will be a better place. And this is one of those ideas. So you will absolutely hear me talk about this again and again, hear us talk about this again.
Just choose one idea?
What? Nope. Lots of ideas. You're capable of this. I know you're capable of this. Okay? Even in your prison shirt, you're capable of this, right? So, anav. What is anav? I had to go there. Never mind. Shh. Watch. You watching the hand? Never mind. Okay? What does anav mean?
Literally?
Pardon? Yeah. Humble. Okay, so what does humble mean? Pardon?
Recognizing that everything
that you do comes to God. Oh, okay. Good, right? Now, anav does not mean that I think that I'm nothing. That's a mistake people make. Okay? There is a term for that, but that's not enough. Okay? Because you're not nothing. Hashem decided that you're something. Hashem created you. Hashem decided that the world needs you. Right? Anava is understanding that all the gifts that you have are just that. They're gifts. Right? To be arrogant about the fact that you're smart is ridiculous. Because you didn't do anything to be smart. Hashem just gave that to you. By the way, it's just as ridiculous as being embarrassed or being humiliated because you're not smart, because you have, I don't know, a learning challenge. Right? Having a learning disability, you know, I don't know how this works in America very much, but in Israel, there are lots of different programs where a kid with learning disabilities is sort of in the school, mainstreamed in different ways, right? And one of the nice things, and I can only speak for the three yeshivot that are in Efrat, and I'm very much aware of this because one of my sons has some serious learning challenges, is that you don't feel when you're in the school that the boys in the high school somehow feel better than or worse than, right? There's just a difference. You know, you have a boy, and his gift is not math. He's just not a whiz at math because he has his learning challenges. So he needs certain help to study math, right? But he might be very good at basketball, or he might be very good at guitar, whatever it might be. So could you imagine how ridiculous it is to feel embarrassed for a learning challenge? Like, that's ridiculous. Hashem created you that way. You should feel challenged to wonder, so why did Hashem give me this recipe, and how is this recipe the best recipe for me to figure out what to do in the world? Okay? It's like being embarrassed. You know, I remember once, okay, I may do this again, so Danielle, you'll clue me in, right? But I was once, it was the summer after the second Lebanon War. A couple months after the second Lebanon War. And I was actually on my way to yeshiva. I was right at the door, or whatever it is, right? And this documentary caught my eye. My wife was, getting ready, and the TV was on. And there's this fellow sitting there. He's being interviewed. And I quickly realized that he was talking about some mitzvah that he was on. And he was clearly, you could see, like, I mean, if you meet a guy who's been in the army, he just got out a year or two ago, he's got that energy still. You can pick it up. So he was obviously talking about something. It was clear he was talking about the Second Lebanon War. And he's talking about this this very difficult mission that they were in. I think in Binjbel, but I might be wrong. And what really caught my eye, the reason I stopped as I was walking the door, was that he had this tremendous smile on his face. Right? He just looked to be a happy person. And it was so incongruous that a guy is sitting there and he seems to be happy, but he's talking about such difficult events. So the woman is the interviewer, who you can't see, just hear her voice, is asking him, you know, about this mitzvah. And he's talking about how, you know, they went in and they were attacked and they were hit by two anti-tank weapons. And he quickly found himself wounded and someone else was wounded or whatever. And the whole time he's talking about this, he's got this big smile on his face. And I'm like, not getting this. So I stop for a minute and I'm watching this, right? And at one point she says to him, you know, would you do it again? Like, would you do it again? So he doesn't understand the question. He said, what do you mean, would I do it again? I was given orders. We were under mitzvah. Of course I would do it again. That's what you do. You're in the army. So she says, no, if you had the chance to go back, knowing what you know now, you're being called up, you're going to war, right? You're in the reserves. He was obviously a young reserve soldier. And you knew what was going to happen in this mitzvah. Would you go again? He said, absolutely. And she says to him, even knowing what happened, like knowing everything, you would still go? And he says, absolutely. He says, look, and at this point, the camera, which was on his face, pans out. And you see that he's sitting like on a lawn, and there's like a building behind him. And you see a couple of people walking back and forth. And then you see he's sitting in a wheelchair. And it pans out a little more, and you see that he has no legs. His legs were chopped off, like, by the knees. He says to her, listen. He says, and he has a kippah on his head. I don't know if that matters, but he says, listen. He says, don't get me wrong. He says, if I could get my legs back, I would love to have them back. There'd be all sorts of things I could do that maybe I can't do. He says, I don't know. He says, I'm determined to be able to do everything I could do, right? But he says, they're just my legs. And he takes his hands and he hits his thighs. He goes, this isn't me. This is a rakaguf shili. This is just my body. He says, so up until a certain point in my life, I had legs because those were part of what I needed in order to do what I was supposed to do. Now, for whatever the reason, Hashem decided, this is on public television in Israel, right? Hashem decided that whatever else I need to do, I don't need legs for. So I don't have legs. So I'll be a little different. He says, but I had the opportunity to serve with some of the greatest human beings that a person could ever know, to serve with them in combat, to defend the Jewish people, to fulfill a mitzvah. I wouldn't do that again. I wouldn't give that up for anything. And I'm standing there watching this, and my eyes are like welling up. Like, you got to be in awe of a person. Because what was so amazing about this was that he wasn't saying something he believed in. He was actually saying it b'simcha. He had a smile on his face. That is the root of anava. It just doesn't get better than that. Whatever you are born with, whatever you're given, whatever comes into your life is given you for a reason. And if you can tap into the root of what anava is supposed to be, then you'll never have a difficult day in your life. That's what you're given today, for whatever the reason. Does that make sense? Right? And that's what the Rambam is saying. You distance yourself from arrogance to the extreme because the distancing of yourself from arrogance is what allows you to do what you can do in this world. It gives you a totally different life. By the way, if you want to understand one of the roots of Shabbat, Shabbat carries with it, among many other things, the ability to tap into this energy. Right? On Shabbat, you get to take a step back and to sort of tap into, you know, why we're really here and what this is all about. And so what was this week about? Like, I don't know about you guys, right? But, you know, last week was an intense week. There's a lot going on. And you don't have time to think about everything when everything's going on. Because, you know, there are people in pain, people struggling, you're not sure, whatever. Then you get a chance to take a step back and it's Shabbat and you get a chance to think about it. And the beginning of thinking about anything, at least for me, is always, okay, so what exactly am I supposed to be learning from this? Why is Hashem giving this to us? Why is this on our plate? For whatever reason, right? And that's what he's saying. Ulefichach tzivu chachamim, and therefore chachamim obligated us, ma'od ma'od avei shafel ruach. Be lowly. Now again, that doesn't mean to be nothing. It means, you know, lower down the fire. It's not all about you, right? Ve'od amru, shekol ha'magbia libo kafar be'ikar. Now you wouldn't understand this unless you have the discussion we just had. If a person is arrogant, okay, he has denied a basic principle. Now when the Gemara talks about kofar be'ikar, does anybody know where we say that? Or what we're talking about? Somebody who's kofar be'ikar? Somebody denies a basic tenet? Give me an example of someone who denies a basic tenet of Judaism. Right? Someone who says there's more than one God. That would be a good example. It's in Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin. How can you compare someone who's arrogant to someone who's idolatrous? Give me an answer. That's what the Rambam's doing. And if you don't believe that's what the Rambam's doing, keep reading. Sheneimar v'ram levavcha v'shachachta et Hashem Elokecha. The Pasuk says, and lest you become arrogant, your heart goes high, and you forget God. V'odamru b'shamta, man de it begasut ruach. A person who's arrogant should be put in cherem. So we'll get back to that in a minute. You should excommunicate. You should just. The person who's arrogant, he needs to be put aside. He can't function within society. The afilu miktzata, even if he's a little arrogant. Yeah?
I don't think that an arrogant person that he says that an individual or himself is above the need of God.
It's not that he can't interact with society. Of course he can interact. There are lots of CEOs that are probably arrogant to some degree. It's a question of whether your interaction with that person is healthy, whether society benefits, and what the value would be to society if he interacted less with society. Now, whether the Gemara that says this is literal or allegorical is a very good question. You would, I guess, suggest that it's allegorical, right? But one way of understanding this is, look, I'll tell you something. You know, I learned this from my wife. You only have so much time in this world. You don't really have time to completely interact and connect with every person that you meet. You just don't. If you would try to have a close relationship with everyone that you meet, you wouldn't be able to function. And more likely what would happen is that some of the people that you need to interact with would lose. And you would lose relationships that are much more important, right? If I really spent all the time that I would want to spend just with the Oraita students, never mind all the other students that I meet, my children would have an absentee father, right? I just went to the States in a week, and you know, we have, I don't know, it's like 49 boys who are interested enough after the Israelites, whatever, to be in touch, to sit down and to be interviewed and to talk. And that's without the 198 names of boys who are interested in the right then came to these meetings, whatever it is. And really what I should do, right, is I should get on the phone and I should speak to each one of them and have a discussion with them and get to know them over the course of the next month. If I did that, we would have no time to talk. And I wouldn't be able to talk to my children, right? So that's the beginning. What's the next stage is, right? That within the context of making those decisions of prioritizing, who do you make time for and who do you not, right? There's certain people that you meet, right? It's just not healthy, right? Sometimes you meet a person and say, you know what? This person, not healthy to be around such a person. Such a person is gonna have an impact on you that you don't necessarily want. Life is too short to spend your time with such a person. That's a very difficult thing to say. And maybe there's a tzaddik or a chassid who's on a level that he can make time for every one of those people. I mean, you know, the legends about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mean, I don't know if anybody here ever, I guess you wouldn't, but I met the Lubavitcher Rebbe a few times. And one of those occasions, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And there were hundreds of people who were waiting to talk to him. And the legends are that he made time for all of them. It was amazing. And he also had a gift to be able to somehow, I can't explain it, and it sounds ridiculous. It sounds so ridiculous, it's almost ridiculous to say it. But he... He in the space of a minute, could give you the feeling. And it's not because of the hype about him, because I've met other people who are Gedolei Torah, and I met other people who were great individuals. Never experienced this with anybody else. There was something about him. He had the ability to make you feel like he knew you in a minute. I really believe that it was true. I don't think it was just hype. But that's just me, right? And I've had this discussion with other people who say the same thing. So there are tzaddikim, chassidim maybe out there who can do that. I don't know about you guys, but I'm definitely not one of them. So you make a decision. Sometimes you meet a person and your energy is just off. Unhealthy energy. Life is too short. Spend your time with people who want what you have to give them. Spend your people, you know, your time with people with whom you can have healthy interaction. Right? Well, 1 second. So that being the case, can a person sort of be arrogant in such a way that the community loses out when he's there? Would it be better for the community that this person be a little separate? Might it even be better for the individual so that he could learn that he's got an issue he needs to work on? Maybe that's what's talking about. What are you saying?
Well, I think you're talking about, you're lumping both arrogances together. There's one arrogance that says you're an individual and you don't need God. There's one arrogance that says I'm an individual, I don't need other individuals. There's a very crucial difference, and I don't think you're making that distinction.
That's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. Are there, well, obviously there are different levels of arrogance because the Rambam is saying that even some arrogance isn't good and you should go to the other extreme, which means a person can have some arrogance or he can have extreme arrogance. That's number one. That I agree with. I think that's just emet. And the other is there a difference between I don't need God and I don't need other human beings? You could make a case for saying that at the root of believing that you don't need other human beings is a lack of realization that every human being is created by Hashem. Like, if you really could know... By the way, this doesn't mean that anybody who doesn't accept God is arrogant. God forbid. It also doesn't mean that a person can't have healthy interactions with people and not believe in God. But if a person has arrogance and has unhealthy interactions as a result of arrogance with people, that definitely is the result of the fact that he doesn't have God. Because if you really had a relationship with Hashem, you couldn't be arrogant. That doesn't prove anything. But if I could care less about a particular student here, because I just think, you know, they're just a student, which is the height of arrogance, right? Okay? So at the root of that is the fact that I don't get that you're created in the image of Hashem. That you're as important, as valuable, as contributing in this room as I am. This whole idea that somehow the Rav is better. He's not Jewish. It's not that he's better. He represents something different. Right? Any more than the doctor is better than the nurse, that's ridiculous. They're just in different roles, but neither is better. And the doctor who walks around arrogant because he's the doctor, not the nurse, is silly. And it will undermine his ability to be a healthy doctor. And if a doctor is arrogant in the extreme, I'm not so sure that it's so simple that the hospital is better off having that doctor. Right? So that's an interesting question. Right? That's what he's saying. Does that make sense? Yeah? Think about it. Right? So, Va'odamru, right, okay, sorry, V'chein hakas. Now, what's the second character trait? And this we talked about the other day, that you have to distance yourself from anger. It's interesting, by the way, that yesterday we put anger before arrogance. Today we're putting arrogance before anger. Why do you think that is? And I just have an opinion. I don't know that this is right. I mean, different people say different things. Why do you think yesterday, when we were talking in Halacha Bet, right, how do you heal a person who thinks that bitter is sweet and sweet is bitter, who's just awful, has the wrong perception of reality? It starts with anger. And then he goes to arrogance. And today, when he's talking about the extreme that you have to distance yourself from, he goes from arrogance to anger. Is that accidental, or? I don't believe that's accidental. The Rambam was too much of a master organizer. So, anybody have an opinion? Do you hear the question? Hear the question? Yeah?
Yesterday we were talking about the middle ground. So with arrogance, with anger, you want to find a little bit more of the middle ground, and with arrogance, you want to go all the way to the...
No. Yesterday we were talking about someone who has a negative trait, right, that he thinks is a good trait. In other words, look, when you get angry at somebody, why does a person allow themselves to stay angry? Like when you're calm and you think about it, does everybody agree that anger is negative, that anger poisons your soul? That's not rocket science, right?
Not always.
Pardon?
It can definitely be good.
How can anger be good? Let me hear.
I see someone stealing something from you, and then if I'm like, ah, who cares, then that's a bad thing. If I get angry at him, that's a good thing. If I get angry and do something, that's a good thing.
If you do something without getting angry, it leads to action.
If a kid does something wrong, he needs to see his parent react angrily to know that it's really...
We're going to get to that.
That's saying anger
leads to action.
I mean, there's a lot of things in the world that could be used for example, but anger itself might be bad. Crazy people, maybe, we don't understand, but then David uses, he pretends to be crazy to escape the police or whatever.
Let me give you an example. Before we get to Mendy's point, let me give you an example. Let's take an easy example. Let's say that, that a boy and a writer, a boy in a writer consistently doesn't wake up till 11. Okay, and let's say that somehow I'm able to have discussions with him to the point that he starts getting up every day at 7. Let's say. Do you agree with me objectively, I'm not talking about if he has a medical condition, but objectively that he's gained from that process, right? Assuming that he doesn't get angry as a result, right? But if as a result he's 3 months later, he's waking up every morning at 7, he's getting more out of his day, he's gained from that result, right? Okay, so that means that I'm seeing something that I think is a little off, and I'm trying to bring it back to a healthy medium. But if I get angry at him, right, so that's negative on every level, right? Do you agree with me so far? Okay, but that doesn't mean, and let's say I talk to that, and I'm not using an example alluding to anybody, I'm just saying, let's say I talk to somebody and I talk to them every day for 3 months. Let's say that I succeed in being an extremely patient person. And let's say I decide that for this particular boy, that what this boy needs is just a regular discussion. And another hug, and another hug, and another hug, until I wear him down. Let's say. Right? Okay? So, I'm not talking about whether I should pretend to be angry. But if I allow myself to get angry, that will always be negative. In other words, you can drive yourself to action without being angry. There are instances where I personally was not able to come up with a good substitution for anger. But that does not mean that anger was good. That just means that I wasn't on the level to be able to do those things without anger. The only example I can think of personally is the army. I mean, there were instances in the army where it was anger that allowed me to get up, to distance myself from whatever fear was there, and it was a conscious decision. Right? If you're being fired at from behind a building, and the only way to solve this problem is that you have to step around the corner. And there's a whole system as to how to do this. That's still a terrifying thing to do. And so for me, the way I would do that is I would take a moment and I would just get myself really angry. And that's how I got around that corner. And I always paid a price for that anger. Always. It was an enormous amount of effort to get that anger out of me afterwards because I didn't want to be an angry person. Which means that at the root of it, that anger was not good. And there are people who are able to get around that corner without getting angry. It's just who they are. That's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. That's a much higher level. Anger is not good. Right? Never good. Pardon? It can motivate you to do good. And there's a reason Hashem put anger in the world. But it doesn't mean that at its root anger is good. That's what the Rambam is saying. You could disagree with the Rambam. But the Rambam is definitely saying, and I happen to agree with this, not that he needs my approbation, that as a rule, you will live a better life deciding that anger is never good. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't use anger. But we're going to get to that, because that's the question of feigning anger. Sometimes you need to feign anger. In fact, it's a dangerous thing to have this discussion with Talmidim, because maybe there'll be an instance where I need to make you feel that I'm angry, right? And now maybe you're going to know that I'm not really angry. I don't know if that's good or not, right? But you cannot communicate out of anger. We had this discussion once. You can't. In fact, if you are angry, you should not be trying to communicate. Nothing or very little good will come of communicating out of anger, even if you're right. I mean, right? We had an instance last week. I think I had a right to get angry about. And I was not willing to have that discussion with that particular student until I decided that I wasn't at all angry. And I'm not angry about that. Never. You know, a person does things and, you know, loses a whole opportunity for an experience in the year, and circumstances brought him to that point, and Hashem determined that he should be at that point, and breaks my heart for him. How could you be angry at that? You could be angry at that. Well, you could be angry because you're human, but it's not good. When you get your anger gone, then you can decide if you want him to think you're angry. That's a different. I didn't see the value of him thinking I was angry, personally. So I didn't go there. There was no point. But if I was angry or when I was angry, then I couldn't have that discussion because it wouldn't be healthy. Anger is something that's worth rooting out. If you go back to your room or you walk out in the street or something happens and you find that you're angry, best thing you can do in the world. And by the way, you have to understand that now this is easier. It's easier to practice this and develop this habit when you're 18. When you're 30 and you're married and you have kids and there's a lot going on and you come home one day and you've got all the pressures of work and all the pressures of this or that and you just found out that you lost everything in the stock market and you come home and your wife does something that really should annoy you and then you get angry, so that destroys your relationship. And if you feel that anger when you walk into your house, for whatever the reason, if one day you're a parent and your kid does something that, I don't know, he takes your favorite your favorite CD and he sits on it and breaks it, or he uses your laptop and as a result of it, he leans over and drops it and spills coffee on your whole computer and all your files are gone, nothing good will come out of talking to him when you're angry. Nothing. You're just better. All that will end up happening is that you'll have to fix it and apologize, and that may be good. Much healthier to be able to look at that situation and decide, okay, so I got to think about why Hashem wanted this to happen, and I have to communicate to him. By the way, that doesn't mean you don't fake anger. You can fake anger. Because when you fake anger, your mind is leading you. Right? Anger on a certain level is a form of addiction. It's a form of addiction. People get addicted to anger. There's a payoff to anger. Feels good. Feels makes me right to be angry. If I'm angry, then I'm right. Right? Anger really has nothing to do with the other person. Right? I know people who've been angry at people who've been dead for 20 years. Think that other person cares anymore that you're angry? Anger has nothing to do. And by the way, being forgiving, forgiveness, we talked about this in Hilchos Teshuva, is to be forgiving. It's an absolute refusal to live in a state of ill will. It's a healthy way to look at the world. Right? And that's what the Rambam is saying here. V'chein ha-kas, mida ra'ahi. It's a bad trait. Ad lima'od, it's terrible. You should try to distance yourself from anger as much as you can. You should teach yourself not to be angry, even about things that are worth being angry about. Right? Like, let me ask you a question. If you're going to be angry, what makes something worthy of anger? Like, if I'm angry about something, what would allow me at least to say, this is at least something worth being angry about? Give me an example of something that's not worth being angry about, and something that definitely is worth being angry about.
People hurting other people.
Okay. I walk into the Beis Medrash one day, right? And there's a guy sitting in the corner, and he looks like the world has just fallen apart. Because, I don't know, two other guys, you know, not from Arita, beat him up. They just didn't like the way he looked, so they start beating him up. They thought it was funny. So could you imagine how ridiculous that was? They were crazy. How could somebody do that, right? What good will come out of finding those two boys and getting angry at them? And you're not angry because of you. You're angry because you care for this other person. You're angry because the world shouldn't be that way. You're angry because you want to fix that because yeshiva students shouldn't do that, whatever. What good is going to come out of anger? You're going to go yell at these kids? You don't even have a relationship with them. You're going to start screaming at them. You're going to get all angry. All that's going to come is you're going to get an ulcer. You can't communicate with them out of anger. You won't get there. Very hard to kind of inculcate this in your life, but as a rule.
What is the right thing to do in that situation?
Pardon?
What is the right thing to do in that situation?
Well, the right thing to do in that situation, that leads us to tochacha, which is perek vav, and that's a very difficult question. But at the root of tochacha, telling someone off, you have to be telling someone off because you care about that person. If you're angry at those two boys, you don't care enough about them. Right? The first thing you can do is ask yourself, what would I do if these were my sons? If these were my sons, I would be so concerned. How am I going to educate these kids? How am I going to get them to a point where they couldn't do something like that? How do we do that? Person needs, I don't know, therapy, rehab, whatever it might be. If two boys could beat someone up, they need a lot of help. Nebuch. Maybe they grew up in abusive homes, whatever it might be. Number one. Number two, you can't give them tochacha if you don't have a relationship with them. So if you really care about them that much, you're going to go and develop a relationship with them. It might take you months before you're able to be in a healthy space with them that you can give them tochacha on that. There are things that maybe now, at the end of November, maybe I'm ready to say to a boy, you know, something we need to work on, and I'm not even sure. There are things that I'll be able, a discussion I might be able to have with someone here, I'm not thinking of anything in particular, at the end of the year, when I hope we have a closer relationship than we do now, that I can't say yet, because I don't feel yet that we're close enough, and that's normal. Yeah, you can't watch injustice and stand idly by, but that doesn't mean that the answer is to get angry and to go yell at them and scream at them. Maybe the anger is to go and speak with their Rosh Hashiva. Maybe the angle is to talk to their Rebbeim, to talk to their parents, to find out that one of them is a really close friend and sit him down.
Rosh Hashiva or a parent, that's just conniving and evil.
Let's take an extreme example. Let's say you saw me beating up Rafi. That's a pretty unhealthy. Well, 1 second. No. Let's agree with me. That's a really unhealthy situation. Now, let's say you get all mad and you're screaming at me and yelling at me. Nothing good will come of that. Now, let's say that you're in a healthier space and you've decided after 2 months that you're valuing some of what you're getting out of the yeshiva, and that what really bothers you about this is that you care about me, and there must be something really wrong if I could do that. Right? And let's say you know you've heard enough stories about Rav Amital that you know, or of Avigdor Nevenzel. So you decide to go talk to Rav Avigdor Nevenzel to say, listen, you know, we have a Rosh Hashiva, his name is Bini, whatever, and he beat up one of the students, and I don't know what to do about it. Right? And you find out that, and maybe Rav Avigdor says, you know what, let's talk to Rav Amital because Rav Bini is close to Rav Amital, whatever, and you get Rav Amital involved. You don't do it because you're telling him, you do it because you care about me. And let's say I get a call from Rav Amital and he says he wants to spend some time with me. I'm thrilled. I mean, if Amital called me up, I'd run, right? I mean, he's my Rosh Hashiva, right? And he has a long discussion with me. He could get me to a healthier space much quicker than most people in the world. The only person who could get me to a healthier space quicker is probably my wife. She might call my wife. And you might say, look, I'm really worried about him because he's not like this. And I don't know what to do. And my wife would sit me down. And maybe they get me into therapy. I don't know, whatever it would be. That would be a series of actions that you took because you care about me. Not because you're angry because somehow your environment has been violated. Now, you're having that reaction because you don't have that kind of relationship with the Rosh Hashiva. So, for example, that tells me that if you were doing something like that, the answer wouldn't be to talk to your Rosh Hashiva. But there's someone in your life that you care about so much that if they were able to somehow have a healthy discussion with you, the chances of it having a healthy impact on you would be better. And if, by the way, you don't think that there's someone like that in your life, which could be, then that's something to work on because you want people like that in your life. Right? That's all. But that's Perek Vav. We'll get to that. Yeah. You're all upset because we beat you up. Yeah.
If someone does something like really, really bad, they're probably not going to have a good relationship. I mean, in most cases, with their Rosh Hashiva or their parents, like, if they randomly beat up a guy in the street, it's not like they probably don't have role models or something. So, how do you?
I've learned in life that probably doesn't work. You just don't know until you know. You know what I mean? People have all sorts of reasons for doing the things that they do. And, you know, one of the healthy things in life is you have to realize when it's beyond your control. Truth is, if two guys could go beat someone up, they would probably be in serious need of counseling. I mean, the average kid coming to yeshiva for the year in Israel, having graduated yeshiva high school or whatever, is not usually prone to beating people up, at least in our world. And if he is, he's got stuff going on in his life. And 9 times out of 10, if something like that, I don't have a lot of experiences of kids beating people up, but I've definitely experienced kids who are violent in grade school. You know, we had a story with one of my children that there was a kid who was just, it was horrendous. I mean, he and another boy were just, they were bullies. And you know, my daughter was just like, you know, many years ago, was scared to go to school. So I said, okay, this is this. So we talked to the teacher, we talked to the principal, it wasn't working. So I decided I had to get involved. So I went to school one morning, right? And, you know, did whatever I did and took the kids aside and scared them a little bit, right? And things calmed down. But I didn't end there. Because I decided now I'd gotten involved, I had an achrayus, I had a responsibility to these kids. What do you think, an 8 or 9 year old kid who does something like that, is that normal? They're only 8 or 9. They're learning this somewhere. And sure enough, this boy was in a very difficult home situation and struggling. So I got involved with the teachers and the principal. I said, look, you need to help this boy. He's struggling. He's only 8 or 9 now. But if we don't help him and get him into counseling and help fix this issue that he's got, then when he's 19, he's going to do something negative and you'll end up in prison. That's your achrayus. He's in your school. It's not about this. You're not angry at that. How could you be angry at an 8 or 9 year old? And this boy threw a rock at my daughter. That's just off. That's just way off. But if you're in a healthy scenario, you care as much about that boy. You have to first stop the violence, but it's not done there. In fact, it's the opposite. If you could walk by a street corner and see some kid in Harlem shooting up, and it doesn't bother you at all, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with who we are as human beings, and I include myself, because we're not willing to stop everything the minute we see someone doing something wrong. But at least you can start from your immediate environment. Does that make sense? And sometimes those instances, they call to you to realize you need to have a healthier relationship with those people. Like, imagine there's someone in this yeshiva, one of your buddies, and he's doing something unhealthy. I mean, this is something worth thinking about because, you know, we went through this whole experience, right? So, and we're not done with it because it's something we need to learn from and grow from, right? So there are many different pieces. And nobody should misinterpret what I'm about to say in any way, shape, or form to imply any level of guilt. Guilt is a waste of energy. I don't believe Judaism wants us to feel guilt. It's more a challenge to learn, to grow, right? But this boy who was doing whatever he was doing, right? If we had known about it 2 months earlier, we might have been able to help him in a way that wouldn't have demanded, you know, sort of the extreme reaction that we had to have. So that calls into question, you know, 20 boys sitting in yeshiva. So could we have done other things to help this boy? You know, like when you're in high school, you get into this mentality that I'm not going to tell the principal because the boy will get into trouble. But sometimes these things are a cry for help. And I think, look, I could be wrong. I think this yeshiva, as best as we can, we're human, we'll make mistakes. We're trying to deal with this in as healthy a way as we can. And I have to say that I think that the guys here have stepped up to the plate in a big way. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's just much easier to avoid these things, to stay angry, to just throw people out, to do whatever you have to do. But that's the essence of community, that we care so much about the people that are around us, that we just want to see them grow and get help, whatever it might be. Suppose you realize, I don't know, you see that someone walks into Mendy's room and, I don't know, steals $20 out of his wallet, or £20, sorry, right? Okay, steals 20, I know Thanksgiving must have been emotionally challenging for you, okay, right? So, pardon?
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare, right? It's a Holy Soul festival, but anyway, right? Okay, but, so you see some boy from the yeshiva, Lo Aleinu, who swipes £20 out of his wallet. What do you do about it?
Kill him.
What do you do about it? So what's the first thing that goes through your mind? The first thing that goes through my mind is, this guy has a problem. Now, right now, he's just stealing £20 from a kid's wallet. We'll fix that. He's got a problem. What's going to happen one day when he's at work and he's embezzling money and he ends up in jail and his wife becomes destitute? Or can we help him fix this problem? It's a problem he has that he can fix. Do you care enough about him to get involved? Or do you just say, it's not my problem? So if it's not your problem, it's all about you. It's not about him. So it's all about yourself. That's the definition of what it means to be selfish, to be all about yourself. Right? And this all stems from this. Right? All right, we got to stop here. I didn't realize the time. Anyway, we'll continue this tomorrow. Hope that this gives you pause for thought. There's a lot to think about here.